In recent years, there's been an alarming uptick in cases where college-aged men have mysteriously disappeared after spending an evening out with friends. In some of these cases, these men will later be discovered dead in a nearby body of water. In others, they're never seen again. Today, we're going to look into the disappearance of Brian Schaefer, one of the most baffling missing person cases to date. Brian, a 27-year-old medical student at Ohio State University, vanished in the early morning hours of April 1st, 2006. He was last seen on CCTV entering a bar and has never been seen or heard from again. He was there one moment, gone the next. What happened to Brian Schaefer? This is Avery After Dark, and I'm your host, Avery Ross. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm just always so happy that I get to be a part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and are following along wherever you listen to the show. If you want all these episodes ad-free, check out the Avery After Dark Patreon, and I'd be so grateful if you left a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. You guys are the best. Thank you for your support. Something else I wanted to touch on, I've gotten quite a few messages from you guys over the past weeks saying that you all are being followed and messaged by accounts pretending to be me. Some of these accounts have sent messages impersonating me, offering readings. They will have my picture, my email, and their bio. It's messed up. I would never ever do that. These are fakes, scammers. This is going on TikTok and Instagram apparently. The accounts I have listed in the show notes are my only accounts, and I just want to look out for you guys. I don't do any kind of readings or any of that stuff, so just a heads up, be on the lookout, block and report anything you find suspicious. All right, now it's time to get into today's case. 20-something-year-old men disappearing after spending the night out at the bars with friends. In recent years, there's been a suspicious surge in cases of this nature all over America. And every time I hear about one of these stories in the news, I always think about the strange vanishing of Brian Schaefer. There's a lot to this unsolved disappearance, so let's start at the beginning. Brian Schaefer was born in February 1979 in Pickerington, Ohio. Brian's father was named Randy, who worked as an electrician, and his mother's name was Renee. She was a nurse, and Brian had a younger brother named Derek. Growing up, Brian was described as a very responsible son and a great student, and supposedly also a phenomenal tennis player. So much so that many thought if he pursued a career, Brian could go professional. He went on to graduate high school in 1997 and enrolled at Ohio State University and studied microbiology and enrolled in the College of Medicine there in 2004. Brian was really close with his mother, and she was his inspiration to get into medicine. He also told friends and family that another huge dream of his was to start a band. He was a big fan of Jimmy Buffett and Pearl Jam, so much so that he got the band's logo tattooed on his arm. In 2006, Brian was a second-year medical student enrolled at Ohio State. Around this time, he began dating a woman named Alexis Wagner. Alexis was also a second-year medical student, studying to become an obstetrician. And according to friends and family, the two were crazy about each other. Those closest to the couple believe Brian was looking to take things to the next level. He was planning to propose to Alexis during an upcoming spring break trip to Miami. This trip was a gift from his mother, Renee. Tragically, in March of that year, Brian's mother passed away from a rare form of blood cancer. A huge loss for the family, it was said that Brian did struggle to cope with her death. And like all students, he was very much looking forward to spring break. Being a second-year medical student, many say it's like a full-time job, and then some. Brian was pulling all-nighters to study for his finals. It was a lot. This brings us to Friday, March 31st, 2006. That night, 27-year-old Brian and his father Randy went out for a steak dinner in town. He had just wrapped up his finals. And there, Brian's father said he looked exhausted. And at dinner, Brian told his dad that he and his friend William Florence, who went by Clint, had plans to hit the town together to celebrate being done with finals. Let spring break begin. Clint was his old roommate, and the two were pretty good pals. Brian's father didn't exactly think this was a best idea, given how tired Brian seemed, but didn't say anything to him. That evening, Brian called his brother Derek, asking him to meet him out that night, but Derek had been at a comedy show with his girlfriend that evening, telling his brother that they were just going to call it an early night and head home. So, after dinner, Brian met Clint out in Columbus around 9 p.m. The guy's first stop of the night was the Ugly Tuna Saluna on High Street. This bar was a very stereotypical American college bar. Cheap drinks, fun atmosphere. At 10 p.m. while he was out, Brian called his girlfriend Alexis and spoke with her about their upcoming trip to Florida that next week. That weekend, Alexis was out of town, visiting her parents in Toledo. And the couple had planned that they would meet up Monday and fly down to Miami together. The flights were booked, they were really looking forward to this. The conversation was very standard, according to Alexis. Nothing out of the ordinary. Brian said he loved her, per usual, and the two got off the phone. From here, Brian and Clint's night continued. The two bar hopped for the next few hours. Each time the men would stop off at a bar, they'd get another drink, stay there for a bit, then head to the next spot. Around midnight, Brian and Clint met up with a friend of Clint's named Meredith Reed. She drove Brian and Clint back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna, where the night began. This was going to be their final stop of the night, get one last drink or two, and then go home. At the Ugly Tuna Saluna, Meredith, Clint, and Brian were inside together, and at some point, Brian becomes separated from Meredith and Clint. The two waited around for him to make his way back, saying they figured he went to the bathroom, maybe went to grab another drink, but Brian never makes it back to them. They begin calling him on his phone, but there was no answer. It's now 2 a.m. on April 1st and the bar is closing, lights are coming on, and still no Brian. Clint and Meredith decide to post up outside the bar, believing they would see Brian leaving, and they stood there, watching the bar crowd pass them by. But again, no Brian. At this point, they thought he probably left the bar without them noticing, likely made his way back to his apartment, which was close by, within walking distance. But over the next 2 days, no one heard from Brian. Both Alexis, Brian's girlfriend, and his father called him repeatedly to check in, but there was no answer. Where was Brian? A new season is upon us. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You have so many choices with Factor. Pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages, helping you stay fueled all day long. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. What are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/Avery50 and use code Avery50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code Avery50 at factormeals.com/Avery50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Going days without speaking to Alexis or his family was not typical for Brian. Alexis went to Brian's apartment looking for him, but he was nowhere to be found. Still, everyone hoped that this was just a big misunderstanding. That Monday, Alexis went to the airport as she and Brian had planned for their flight to Florida. She anxiously waited at their gate, hoping that Brian would come running up at the last moment. But time passed and there was no sign of him. As their flight began to board, Alexis was still alone. Brian didn't show up. At this point, she is completely panicked, thinking about that final conversation with Brian, how normal it was. She knew that something was terribly wrong. Alexis immediately calls Randy, Brian's father, and Randy drives to Brian's apartment to track him down. There, he gets inside and sees that everything is as it should be. Bed made, house in order, car outside. Except Brian is nowhere to be found. Randy then calls the police to report his son missing. The first 72 hours when someone goes missing is crucial. This is when important information and evidence can be gathered, which in turn increase the chances of finding that person and bringing them home safely. The first 48 hours are really crucial, as investigators say this is the time when they have the best chance of following up on leads, before people's memories start to fade, because it's easy to forget. Think about what you did this morning, or even yesterday. You can most likely recall that pretty easily. Now try and think about what you did 5 days ago, or last week at this time. It's a bit hazier, isn't it? You may remember general things, but the specifics are harder to recall. So those first couple days, investigators are working against the clock. Sadly, each hour decreases the likelihood that the missing person will be found. As time goes on, there's less and less for investigators to go on. Brian's brother Derek said, given the day he went missing, April 1st, he initially wondered, was this some sort of April Fool's Day prank? Because this just didn't make any sense. Everyone knew this upcoming trip was very meaningful for Brian. Not only because he was planning to propose to Alexis, but because it was a gift from his mother. The search for Brian begins, and Alexis stays at Brian's apartment, hoping he will return. Police begin their investigation. They check hospitals, shelters, but don't find anyone matching Brian's description. Missing person flyers are plastered all over town. The media picks up on the story. Brian is a taller guy, 6'2", around 165 pounds, handsome, and had that distinctive Pearl Jam tattoo on his arm. Family and investigators hope that someone will remember seeing him and come forward. In the meantime, Alexis takes it to social media, getting onto Brian's MySpace page, asking anyone and everyone to be on the lookout for Brian. But still without any sign of him, investigators believe their best starting point would be the last place Brian was seen. They want to retrace his steps from that last night. Police arrive at the Ugly Tuna Saloon. Fortunately, police find that the bar had a number of CCTV cameras. This is because this area had a lot of crime. And in fact, Columbus had the most security cameras out of any city in Ohio. So this is a great lead. They will see exactly what happened that night. Brian's movements will lead them straight to him, you would think. This is where things get really bizarre. Investigators pull footage from the night of April 1st and see that at 1:15 a.m., Brian, Clint, and Meredith arrived at the Ugly Tuna. They ride the escalator up to the bar's front entrance, and in this, everything appears to be fine. Brian looks like he's having a good time, but not overly intoxicated. Once off the escalator, cameras show the three walking into the bar. At 1:55 a.m., security footage shows Brian just outside the entrance of the bar, in the corner of the frame, talking with two college-aged women. They speak for a bit. Brian then appears to say goodbye to the two women. Then he leaves the frame of the camera and walks back inside the bar. So police continue watching, waiting for him to leave the bar. Footage showed a crowd of people leaving just a few minutes later at 2 a.m. at closing time. But strangely, Brian is never seen leaving the bar. This footage has been reviewed over and over, slowed down, and that CCTV does not show him leaving the Ugly Tuna that night. Or ever, for that matter. From that footage, it seems Brian re-entered the bar and never left. Could it be that the cameras missed him? Of the two cameras at the bar, one was manually operated and the other panned back and forth. One of the original investigators, named Andre Edwards, told Columbus Monthly that after extensive review of that footage, he could say with 100% certainty that Brian Schaefer did not leave via the escalator. But what about another door? The bar has to have another way to exit. And it does. We know about that front entrance where the cameras were pointed, but the bar also had a service door in the back. But the odd thing is, at this time, that service door opened to an area that was heavily under construction. Investigators looked at this spot and believed it would be very hard for someone who was intoxicated to make their way through this area. It would have been dark, and again, there's no evidence that Brian did leave through this door. No one saw him exiting there. There wasn't security footage of this door, but there were security cameras from surrounding areas in that back entrance zone, nearby businesses, so those were checked. Police wanting to see if he did leave out that back service door, but Brian is never seen on any of that surveillance footage either. Investigators believed that if Brian left through that door, they would have seen him on surveillance in either direction. Another important note, this door was not generally used by the public. So why Brian would have left through this door also doesn't make sense. Even in an intoxicated state, which Brian didn't appear to be overly inebriated in that CCTV footage, you would think anyone would open up this door, see a construction site, and say, oh, no way, I'm using the other door. So there is no footage of Brian leaving the bar that night, ever, at any point. Police went over that surveillance footage of that front entrance, and according to news reports, investigators looked through that footage in such a way that every single person that left that night was accounted for, except for Brian. How could that be? We'll be right back. You're back with Avery After Dark. It seemed like Brian had disappeared into thin air. He entered the bar that night and never left? What? Even if you can get past the idea that maybe the cameras at the Ugly Tuna did glitch, maybe he did slip out undetected. Fine. But my question is, how is it that Brian isn't seen on any other surveillance footage around the bar either? Because investigators checked all CCTV footage at nearby bars and businesses as well. Places that he would have passed by if he did leave and walk back to his apartment. There is no sign of him anytime, anywhere after that 1:55 a.m. mark. It is baffling. Given that Brian is never shown leaving the bar, police want to search the Ugly Tuna Saluna up and down. And investigators did a thorough search of the bar itself. Was it possible that Brian had died in some manner inside the bar after he was last seen on surveillance and was still inside somewhere? When alcohol is involved, there's always the question of someone falling and possibly hitting their head. But authorities stated they searched every part of that building, every corner of the bar, every square inch of the back rooms, and never found a trace of Brian. So it didn't appear that Brian left, but it didn't seem like he was still inside the bar either. Where in the world do you go from there? Police felt they had no choice but to look outward and work on the theory that he had somehow left the bar. And since Brian was drinking, investigators said he could have been an easier target of a robbery that night, a mugging. So did something happen on a walk home? In those first days after he was reported missing, over 50 police officers searched for Brian. They looked at possible routes he would have taken home. They searched his apartment, around his apartment, his car, which was parked outside. Found nothing. They looked in sewers, dumpsters, talking with people in the area. Police were sometimes accompanied by police cadaver dogs trying to track Brian's scent. But the dogs couldn't even pick up anything from Brian. They searched the Olentangy River that ran near campus, close to Brian's apartment. There's also been no activity on Brian's credit cards or bank accounts. You may be saying, what about Brian's phone? And that was my first thought too. But according to reports, Brian's phone did not have GPS enabled. This was 2006, so its location could not be determined. So another dead end. And there was another strange twist in this case. Initially, both Meredith and Clint were talking with police. And Meredith was asked to take a polygraph and says yes. She took it and passed. Meredith was reportedly very cooperative with police, really telling them that she didn't know what happened. But with Clint, it became a much different story. As police continue their investigation, they want more. Clint and Brian had been roommates at one point. They knew each other very well. And Clint was one of the last people to ever see Brian. Investigators want to know, what were their conversations like that night? Did the two talk about anything out of the ordinary? Well, that's a complete mystery, because when investigators asked Clint to take a polygraph, answer a few questions about his final hours with Brian, he refused. Clint then lawyered up and didn't offer any more information from that point forward. And it wasn't that Clint was being singled out either. Everyone involved was given a polygraph. Meredith, as we just covered, even Randy Schaefer, Brian's father, was given a polygraph. According to his lawyer, Clint said he had nothing to hide and told the investigators everything he knew. But this made many very suspicious of Clint. In an interview with Mel magazine, Derek, Brian's brother, said he didn't know Clint very well, but always thought something was off with him. He said, quote, "The way he talked about my brother after he went missing, kind of in a negative way, I wouldn't expect that from someone whose friend vanished," end quote. And it's not just that. Police said from their investigation, they gathered that Clint and Brian had been in some kind of altercation that night, an argument. The question is, what kind of altercation? What was it about? That remains a mystery, as Clint has never shared what the two men discussed. And there wasn't anything that connected Clint to Brian's disappearance, so investigators have to continue their search. Other friends and family were questioned, but strangely, the two women Brian was last seen chatting with were not asked to take polygraph tests. In 2009, they were tracked down and said they had never been asked to. But according to reports, the women said the conversation with Brian that night was normal, just friendly. So the two women didn't seem to have any connection to Brian's disappearance either. Given the lack of evidence, investigators were forced to consider that Brian, perhaps, disappeared on purpose. Considering the loss of his mother, along with the amount of stress he was under in school, he had been exhausted, pulling all-nighters all week, investigators questioned if he could have left that night to temporarily grieve alone. One theory suggested he could have changed his clothes inside the bar, put on a hat to leave, kept his head down as he exited, in an attempt to hide his face from the camera. Investigators have to consider all angles, but I find this theory unlikely. To get away is one thing, but there had been no activity on Brian's credit cards, bank statements, no phone activity. I don't care if you are wanting to go off the grid, you're gonna need money. Food, a place to stay, it takes money to operate. And another note, if someone did want to get away for the weekend and be alone, you wouldn't need to do it like this. He could have just gotten up and left from his apartment. And at the end of the day, there is no evidence that Brian wanted to leave on his own. And his family always insisted there was no indication that Brian would want to leave his life voluntarily. And this theory of him leaving temporarily didn't make sense, because it wasn't temporary. He didn't come back. Randy Schaefer, who had just lost his wife to cancer and now his son is missing, continued to look for Brian on his own. As police continued to search, he so badly wanted to find Brian, he consulted with a psychic. And this person reportedly told Randy that Brian's body was in water near a bridge. So from there, Randy and Derek head out and start searches along the shores of the Olentangy River, which flows adjacent to the college campus. And they search that river for days and days, miles, until on one occasion, Randy almost fell into the water and nearly drowned. Just so heartbreaking what this family went through. Time passed and there was no movement in Brian's case. Alexis said that every night before going to sleep, she would call Brian's phone, saying it would always go to voicemail, except one night in September, Alexis called and was stunned. For the first time, Brian's phone didn't go to voicemail. It rang three times. Alexis immediately calls the police, and they in turn reach out to his service provider. They found his phone had pinged on a tower 14 miles northwest of Columbus, but the service provider claimed that this could have been a glitch. Keyword, could have, because to this day, no one can really be sure. As days turned into weeks, weeks into months, Brian's case began to go cold. Detectives and police are baffled by Brian's disappearance. Police received many tips, but none led anywhere. This left Brian's family at a loss. At a Pearl Jam concert later that year in Cincinnati, lead singer Eddie Vedder took a break in between the show to ask for tips and information in Brian's disappearance, but none of those were useful. Police received tips about possible Brian sightings in Michigan, Texas, and Sweden. All were investigated, but again, led nowhere. Investigators have never located anything of Brian's. That last night, he would have had his keys, his wallet, and his phone, but none of these items have ever been discovered. And tragedy struck again. 2.5 years after Brian disappeared, in September 2008, Randy was outside in his front yard doing some work when the wind blew a branch off a tree from above, and this branch struck Randy and killed him. He was found the next day. For Derek, every member of his immediate family was gone. After Randy's death, an obituary was posted online, many offering their sympathies, condolences, but there was one comment in particular that stood out to the family. It read, "Dad, I love you. Love, Brian." And in parentheses, U.S. Virgin Islands. For a moment, it was thought this could be a real lead. Was this actually Brian? Was he still alive? And was he hinting about where he was located? But sadly, police investigated this comment and found it didn't come from the U.S. Virgin Islands. Rather, it was tracked to a public computer in the Columbus, Ohio area. Investigators believe this was a hoax. We'll be right back. You're back with Avery After Dark. Shortly after Randy's passing, an attorney who was representing Clint, named Neil Rosenberg, wrote to Don Corbett, a private investigator who had been volunteering to help find Brian. Neil suggested that Columbus police investigating the case believed Brian was alive, saying, quote, "If Brian is alive, which is what I'm led to believe after speaking with the detective involved, then it is Brian and not Clint who is causing his family pain and hardship," end quote. He went on to say Brian should come forward and end this, saying that Clint had nothing to hide. Friends and family close to Brian have always wondered why Clint wasn't more forthcoming. Derek Schaefer said, as soon as the detective started getting involved, that's when he pretty much had no contact with anybody. Derek went on to say that he always thought Clint definitely knew something, just wouldn't come forward with it. He also said, if Brian did take off somewhere, we just always had a strong feeling that Clint would possibly know that. Alexis Wagoner, Brian's girlfriend, stated that she believes Clint is withholding information, but doesn't believe Brian would run off. Rather, that he is dead, saying she just couldn't imagine that he would have done that. There have been a number of theories in Brian's disappearance, one being that Brian did leave the bar that night, somehow slipped out undetected, was not caught in any security footage, but sometime after leaving, was met with foul play. This bar was in an area that had a high rate of crime, robbery being a possible motive. Investigators stated Brian would be more vulnerable to a mugging as he had been drinking and was separated from the group. Another theory is that Brian met the assailant at the Ugly Tuna Saloon that night. Did this individual target and follow him? Another theory is that Brian actually never left the bar. It's been widely discussed that something transpired after he re-entered around 1:55 a.m. and he died inside the bar. It's more of a conspiracy theory on the internet, just speculation. But many have discussed that an employee at the bar could have been scared and disposed of Brian's body out that back service exit, or waited until those front cameras were turned off after everyone left. Now, this again seems unlikely as investigators never found any evidence of a homicide at the Ugly Tuna. Another widely debated theory is that Brian Schaefer is still alive, that he did leave the bar that night, undetected, and started a new life somewhere. But as we covered, friends and family always insisted there was no indication or motive for him to fake his disappearance. And again, I find this theory very unlikely, but I understand in cases where someone up and vanishes, every angle has to be looked at. There's also been a lot of speculation that Brian was targeted by someone, the Smiley Face Killer. Since 1997, more than 45 young men have mysteriously disappeared after a night at the bars with friends, only to later be discovered in a nearby body of water, a lake, or a river. Most of these men are college-aged, popular, athletic, and almost all of these men were last seen leaving bars or parties while intoxicated. Although police have theorized that these men were inebriated, got too close to the water, and accidentally fell in, a more sinister theory has emerged in recent years, that these were not accidental drownings, but rather well-planned-out murders. For longtime listeners of the show, you remember we did an entire episode on the smiley face killer theory. This theory started to take off in 2008 when two retired New York City police officers turned private investigators began looking into these cases and came forward with an eerie discovery. Painted on walls near the locations where many of these young men were discovered, they found the same symbol, a smiley face. Along with the symbol and the striking similarities between the victims, these two private investigators theorized that these men were actually victims of a serial killer or network of serial killers, known as the smiley face killers. They believe the killer or killers are psychopaths, having no remorse and targeting these very popular, good-looking young men out of envy and jealousy. When you first hear about this theory, you may say, seems a little far-fetched. But when you look into the details of these cases, you do say, that is strange. For example, many of these victims were last seen leaving bars alone with unmarked cars following them. And in many of these cases, the evidence suggests that many of the victims were killed before entering the water, suggesting that someone killed them and placed them in the water. Many found with ligature marks around their neck, heads, and torsos. And many victims' positions in the water are inconsistent with a typical drowning. So a widely discussed theory on the internet has been that Brian was a victim of the smiley face killer. Although we know Brian has never been found, and there's no real evidence that has ever connected the smiley face killer theory to Brian's case, but this has been and still is widely discussed on the internet, especially in recent years, as we've seen such a strange uptick in cases of this nature. But as of today, what really happened to Brian Schaefer is a mystery. Did he actually ever leave the bar? What did Brian and Clint get into an altercation over? In 2014, Columbus PD stated they still receive at least two tips a month regarding Brian's disappearance, but none have proven useful. And that was 10 years ago. They did say that Brian's case file consists of four huge boxes of files. Investigators stated they have three theories about the case, but declined to discuss them publicly. Brian's only remaining family consists of his younger brother, Derek, who is still looking for him. In 2020, a flicker of hope emerged when a photo of what looked like an American man who was homeless in Tijuana, Mexico, went viral. Many believed this individual looked a lot like Brian Schaefer. This man was also possibly seen in San Diego. But after facial analysis, the FBI stated that this was not Brian Schaefer. In looking at the photo myself, I'm not sure I see the striking resemblance. Today, Brian Schaefer would be in his 40s. Recently, the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation released a digital mock-up of Brian's face to show what he would look like today, hoping someone, somewhere, may spot and recognize him. Anyone who has any information is urged to call Central Ohio Crime Stoppers. They have offered a $100,000 reward. This case is so haunting, mysterious, and tragic, what Brian's family had to go through. The loss of Renee to cancer, then the sudden disappearance of Brian, which has become one of America's most baffling cases, and then the sudden and tragic death of Brian's father, Randy, who fought with everything he had to help find his son those final years he was alive. I pray for Brian's brother, his family, and friends, that one day they get answers as to what really happened to Brian. One thing that Randy Schaefer was passionate about was passing a bill statewide, establishing a protocol for missing persons cases. Because when Brian disappeared, it was really left up to individual departments on how to handle an investigation into a missing person. Because of this, many felt their loved ones' cases suffered. Before he passed, Randy teamed up with other families of missing adults in Ohio, lobbying the state to pass a bill like this, set up a standard protocol that every department would follow when someone is reported missing. And by the time Randy passed away, the bill had become law. If there are any unsolved cases you'd like to see covered here on Avery After Dark, please send those over to me. I'd really like to highlight more of the unsolved cases as much as I can, because keeping these stories alive and talked about is the only way they get solved. Thanks so much for tuning in for today's episode. Until next time, I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark.